There is nothing wrong with your radio. Please don't turn us off. That was the infamous orchestra fail viral YouTube. We are going to be talking about high school music programs during this hour. Were you in a high school orchestra or band? Did you think it was worthwhile? Are your kids interested in high school music programs? If you appreciate your high school bands, orchestras, and choirs, and are concerned about their future and the future of kids who may not have access to them, we would love it if you would join our chorus this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, October the 7th. Our guest wants to keep the music, the good music, coming out of public schools and music education inspiring our children. And he has some ideas to change the way it is taught to ensure it is around in the future. And we will talk with him this hour and welcome your questions and maybe your own experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is David Saul, Associate Director of the Music Access Project of Portland, Oregon, and he is a student at Oberlin College and Conservatory in Oberlin, Ohio. He wrote a piece on how to save high school music, and that ran in USA Today recently. We have linked that piece to our website and the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And David Saul joins us from Cleveland, Ohio, the studios of WCPN Public Radio in Cleveland. Good morning.
Good morning. I really enjoyed the intro music.
Now, that was, we just wanted to get everybody's attention. Is high school music failing right now, though?
You know, not in all instances, I don't think. But I do think that, at least in my experience in Portland, we really see music leaving schools. Programs are just being cut left and right. It seems that when there are cuts that need to be made in education, the arts disproportionately get affected. So with Music Access Project of Portland, we've been trying to look at ways to keep the arts really relevant to education and make everyone see how relevant it is so that they can so that when a principal is thinking of, you know, what do I need to cut at my school, when they're faced with budget cuts, they decide, you know, maybe music isn't actually the best choice for
them. Yeah, we've seen that in Wisconsin as well. And
yes,
and we will talk with someone from Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Center for Music Education, a little bit later in the program. But you say the way it is now, sometimes you might not blame administrators for cutting a music program when faced with so many budget constraints and so few students who are a part of them?
Right. That's exactly right. I think, I do go to Oberlin Conservatory, and I absolutely understand the benefit of getting a very conservatory-like education in music. And I play clarinet, and I think that the craft of playing an instrument is very beneficial in many tangible and intangible ways. But I think that there's it seems like in a lot of public schools, the same music is taught in the same way that it is at Oberlin Conservatory. When I got from high school to college in this very intense music school, I didn't see that much of a difference in rehearsals other than, you know, they were longer and maybe more strict. But I think that for a lot of students, they end up feeling like they need the same kind of there's not the room for creativity that they would expect from a music program when they enter. I think it's easy to romanticize about this idea that, oh, well, people are in band and they're learning to be creative and innovative. When in reality, I mean, it's you being quiet and sitting and taking directions. And in some ways, it's very similar to a math class or an English class.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think there's a lot of room to grow to really sort of tap into to students' creativity.
Yeah, you even think that the music selected, the music that is performed in high school bands and orchestra is getting stale.
Yeah, I mean, in some sense, I think yes. And I wrote in USA Today that, you know, if something isn't excuse me, if something isn't a Shostakovich symphony or an arrangement of it, it probably sounds like one. I think that clearly there are exceptions to this rule, and many of the comments that I received said, "Well, my school didn't do that." And I think the important thing, though, is to sort of for music educators to know their audience and to be able to, you know, tap into other cultures. For example, something that's become popular in areas with large Hispanic populations is having mariachi bands. There are many different ways that don't necessarily revolve around sort of European music or music that sounds like it is from that lineage directly.
Mm-hmm. So diversify the music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you you also mentioned that in the USA Today piece that there are, you know, new technology could be incorporated in music programs in school, and it's not so much. How so?
You mean how so is it not, or how so could it be?
Both.
Both. I think that technology, if it's used judiciously, it can be used to really facilitate a much more creative experience in school. So I think it's funny that I went through school, you know, listening to so much music on the radio, listening to music on CDs, but never having any idea how you would actually go about creating a CD or producing it or recording myself. There are so many opportunities for that. And I think a lot of music educators say, yes, it's important to record yourself because that's the best way to learn how you sound is by listening to yourself. But you could really take that to another level and say, well, here's a project where we're going to produce a CD, or we're going to go on GarageBand, which is Apple's sound editing software. And it's extremely easy to use and learn how to use all the different things on that. And there are a bunch of loops that students can use on it. So really, you don't even need to have a high level of musicianship to create some piece of art that's of quality with these new technological programs.
Yeah. And it's your belief that this would encourage more students to enroll in the music programs?
I believe so. I think a lot of people might see this as some kind of dumbing down of the high art tradition of music education, and I understand that, but at the same time, I think that we really need to start with where the student is. And I think when a student goes into an arts program, in general, they are expecting to create something. So there needs to be some kind of balance of really tapping into students' creativity and teaching them the technique and musicianship and all these things that do come from some kind of traditional lineage. And there has to be a balance.
And then you believe that the arts supporters, the music supporters, can tout the creativity that is indeed being taught in these programs.
Absolutely. If we look at what's supposed to be taught to students in the 21st century, quote unquote, I think at a national level, we're looking at, well, we want more engineers. We want more people who are innovative and invent things and patents and all these things. Well, music and art in general can really teach this if we're doing it right. I think if we can make the case that that is what it's doing, which if it's taught as vocation, we really can't make that case. But if we can and we change things, there's definitely that's going to be a huge asset for music education, and I think that will sustain it into the 21st century.
We are talking about how to save high school music programs with a guest who says that there should be an emphasis on creativity, problem solving, and cultural harmony in teaching these high school music programs, such as a band and orchestra and choir. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are wondering if the music education programs are doing okay in your local school. Do you think that maybe music education should be, there should be a change in the way it is taught? We welcome your thoughts and questions. David Saul is our guest. He is the Associate Director of the Music Access Project of Portland. He is also a student at Oberlin College and Conservatory. And we welcome your thoughts and questions. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly sunny and mild in southern and eastern Wisconsin, turning cloudy and windy with a slight chance of rain in the northwest. Highs today, mid-70s to low 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, October the 7th. Coming up after 4, it's your views on the news. You can call in and talk about what you think was the week's most important news story after 4 this afternoon, and it's our week in review after 8. We will have two guests from different political perspectives talking with you about all the big political news stories of the week coming up in our next hour. Right now, we are talking about music education with a guest who wrote a column that appeared recently in USA Today on how to enliven and save high school music. And we're welcoming your questions for him and your views on this. David Saul is our guest. He is currently a college student at Oberlin College and Conservatory in Ohio. He's from Portland, Oregon, and he is the associate director of the Music Access Project in Portland. And David, before we go back to the phones, what exactly are you planning on doing with this Music Access Project once you graduate?
I think there are a few directions we could go with it, and because it's really still in its beginning stages, it's a nonprofit in Oregon, but it's still within its first year, so we're still really developing the path we want to take. But it's definitely going to involve a lot of advocacy. Something that we've been very good at, I think, is really having conversations with the right people. So we're trying to have conversations with, you know, the teachers' unions in Portland, in the Portland area, that is, with music teachers, obviously, with administrators. And we've been really successful at doing that. And I think there will be some element of having a community music school that's meant to sort of bolster the programs that are already in the schools. What I mean by that is I think there are a lot of private music organizations that that end up detracting from public schools, because a lot of youth orchestras or things like this are of a higher quality sometimes than what's offered in schools. So people who have the money to pay the tuition for these things will take their students out. So we're looking at ways to have our own program that probably has some kind of requirement that you are in your school's program if it exists, and trying to really collaborate with the teachers in schools to make sure that the whole community, the whole musical community, is stronger as a result.
Do you fear that if these changes aren't made, or some changes aren't made, that music education in the public schools is going to go away?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's already started in Portland and in many other areas too, I think. But there were a handful of layoffs of music teachers this past year in Portland for I think it's been that's been happening for a few years in a row. And I know Portland Public Schools is not the only school district where this is the case. It's really, I mean, it's very tough times for schools, obviously. And I think because so many people are of the opinion that music is something that can be taught outside the school day, which, you know, it can. It does. Music can be taught outside the school day. It's really led to a privatization of music education, and we're sad to see that, because not everyone can afford that. So obviously, it's not equal access.
Yeah, and do you think society is worse off if the public schools aren't involved in the music education?
Definitely. I mean, I think that I mean, over and over we see these reports of the beneficial or the benefits of music to all students. And I mean, it makes people better students. It makes them better citizens. It enriches everybody's life. Obviously, I think there needs to be some reform to the way music is taught to really get at these things better. But it's definitely it's definitely something that is going to be at the detriment of schools if it falls out of them completely.
Let's go to the phones. Barb in Verona is with us first. Hello, Barb.
Hi. There's so many things I wanted to say. I don't know where to start, but I grew up in a rural school where it was a fully funded band. We got ones at state all the time. That school now has a high school band of 27 kids. When I went through, there were close to 80, and they just can't fund it. The kids have to pay a fee to be in band. They have to pay a fee to be in art. And I think if we don't get to these legislatures that are cutting public school funding, we won't have the bands, and it won't be because the communities don't want them. It will be because they're defunding public schools right and left. And the other thing I wanted to say is Gardner's learning style theory includes the musical learner. And the musical learner really does learn with music. And I have a son like that who is absolutely thriving in Verona. And I like the way they do it. What they do is they take input from the kids. They say, what do you want to play? What do you think our next concert should include? And the kids actually have input even on how to arrange the music. And then they allow the kids to be TAs. And they have a multi-age system where top horn players can go down and help the ninth grade in a concert. Or even band directors. Sometimes they'll sit in a concert if they need an instrument there. And it's really a cool program. So I just wanted to make that note. We need to get to the legislators and really, really push.
Yeah. David Saul?
Yes, I think correct. Across the board, I first of all, that band program sounds wonderful. I think the more democratic that decisions are with student input and all of that, that really does make programs stronger in general. It gives students a vested interest in the program more. As far as talking to the legislature, I absolutely agree. I think that something you see, especially in band as opposed to choir, is that there are all these funding issues just at the individual family level. So if somebody can't afford an instrument, for example, or they can't afford the participation fee for marching band or all these various things that in some bands you're required to do, there's absolutely no way you can be in the program. Sometimes there's scholarships available. That's not always the case. You don't necessarily see the same thing in choir, and I think that is one reason that you see people from more diverse economic and racial and ethnic backgrounds in choirs, at least in my neck of the woods, in Portland, that's the case. And so yes, I think that's absolutely correct.
On Facebook, Teresa writes, "Learning how to read music is how I got the hang of fractions. It was a nice way to visualize a whole through the half, quarter, eighth, 16th notes." Are you a math whiz, David?
I've been told so in the past. No, I think that that's definitely something that we've looked at in Portland too. Is this idea that students do tend to be better at math who are in music programs, and music does help with fractions. It helps with just cognitive ability across the board. There's a nice sort of distinction, I think, between benefits like that in music, which I call instrumental benefits. There was a report by the RAND Corporation that came out in 2004 that talked about the difference between instrumental and intrinsic benefits to the arts, and I think that's a nice distinction. So you have things like I'm better at math because I took music, which would be an instrumental benefit. You can also get that from other things, from doing from practicing fractions or these other things. At the same time, there are benefits to the arts, like I can grow in a way as a person unique to my arts education that I would not be able to get from anywhere else. And you really have to look at both of these things when you're advocating for the arts. And because the arts sort of has both these things, it can work sort of as a vehicle to being a better academic, and it can also just fulfill you as a person because the arts are part of, the liberal arts, or music is specifically. I think that should make music advocacy very, very easy compared to other subjects. So it's sort of ironic that this is the subject that's really falling out of schools.
Sarah in Spring Green is with us now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I can't honor enough my high school band director. Not only told me or taught me the importance of self-acceptance with music, but I am a teacher today because of her, and I've always used my high school music experience as a way of not only fostering creativity in my own classrooms, but engaging students in music from all over the world, all types of music, from jazz to classical. And again, I can't explain the importance of how much that experience in high school music changed my life and made me a better musician myself. To this day, I am still using music in my classroom, and I wanted to thank my high school band director for that journey.
And I'm sorry, Sarah, what kind of subject are you teaching?
I teach preschool.
Uh-huh.
And I use, in my preschool, I use music to teach fluency, rhythm, reading, and just the beginning stages of literacy. And people don't understand how much music and the use of music in the classroom, how valuable that is, especially between the ages of 2 and 5.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Sarah, for joining us. We'll get our guest to react and take more calls for him after we check the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We will also hear from the executive director of the Wisconsin Center for Music Education coming up after the news. We are talking about music education programs and how they're declining these days in our public schools, and why we need to save them, according to our guests. Music education programs in public schools should be reformed to focus more on teaching creativity, innovation, problem solving, and cultural harmony. This can be done by using modern technology more and allowing more students to create their own music. It can also be done by the type of music that is played and performed. We are talking with a guest who wrote about these ideas in a recent USA Today column, and we're wondering what you think about the state of music education and what can be done to save it. David Saul is the Associate Director of the Music Access Project of Portland, Oregon, and a student at Oberlin College and Conservatory. His USA Today piece is linked to our website and on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we thought, since we were talking about music education on a national level, we thought we would check in with someone from Wisconsin to also talk about these ideas. And we are happy to have with us Mike George, who is the executive director at the Wisconsin Center for Music Education. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you.
Thanks very much for being with us. So what is the state of music education in Wisconsin public schools?
Well, first of all, I applaud Mr. Saul for the passion and for continuing to bring this issue forward. Coincidentally, this week in a national journal for the Association for Music Education, the president of the National Association has made many of the same points. So the good news is that Mr. Saul is not a voice in the wilderness. He has compatriots who believe as he does. I think in Wisconsin we're very fortunate that we have a tradition of actually following many of the recommendations that Mr. Saul has made. Part of the reason I think we're continuing to be successful and that music is strong in our state is we are a state of primarily smaller school districts where the community is very supportive of music and where in many ways music in the schools is the window through which the community views the school, and school administrators and school board members know that. So that while we have had cuts in staffing and some instructional time, I think music is taking its cuts just like other subject areas. It has not been singled out as something that's unnecessary or unneeded. So that I think is a positive. At the same time, we're moving ahead in many ways to do exactly what Mr. Saul recommends and what our national and state associations have recommended. For instance, in our schools, we have a real explosion of what I'll call alternative music ensembles, rock groups, steel drum bands, gospel groups, world drumming programs, handbells, various kinds of vocal groups, and many of these are actually student-initiated, so that the teacher functions more as a guide and a coach rather than strictly as a leader. And so it allows for that creativity, and there's just a tremendous growth. We have a program that we sponsor, we being the School Music Association, called Launchpad, which is a statewide program for high school garage bands. It's now in its eighth year. And these are groups of students who have been making music, but largely outside of school.
Oh, that is wonderful. And I have to admit, I did see at West High School in Madison a music day where rock bands were playing and jazz bands were playing, and it was a lot different than when I was in high school, put it that way.
Well, that's true. And in the Launchpad program, these students are invited to use the resources of the school to enhance the quality of their work. We bring them together in regional and statewide competition, and it's really a variety of kinds of groups. And I think the important thing is it connects music that students want to make inside school and outside of school with the school music teacher. Mention of technology is tremendous. You know, if you were to go to YouTube and just put in Solon Ensemble Festival, because Wisconsin has a great tradition of Solon Ensemble Festivals. Matter of fact, I need to ask you, Joy, were you involved in music in Wisconsin?
I was not. I took piano lessons, but I didn't play an instrument in school.
Well, good for you for taking piano lessons. But each year, over 170,000 students in Wisconsin schools participate in Solon Ensemble Festivals. And this is all kinds of vocal and instrumental ensembles. We have a category called the Folk Ethnic Heritage Ensemble, which includes everything from American Indian dance and drum ensembles to polka bands to Celtic groups. And this is really a fast-growing area, along with jazz combos and vocal ensembles, particularly a cappella vocal ensembles.
It sounds great. I did, back in grade school, I do remember taking some sort of aptitude test of some sort for a possible musical instrument, because the music teacher talked to me and wondered if I wanted to play an instrument. And I said, well, my sister was playing the viola, I believe it was. And I said, well, how about that? And she said, no, how about the oboe? And I had never heard of an oboe, and I didn't want to take the oboe, so I am not an oboe player. In any case, what about the enrollment, though? Our guest is saying that, at least in Portland and other districts, that the enrollment in these high school music programs, maybe with a choir being the exception, is going down.
Well, the enrollment in our schools really varies. In smaller school districts, you will find 50% sometimes of the students involved in a music class. And it doesn't necessarily mean just a band or a choir or an orchestra. There are other offerings, too, some of the other alternative ensembles I mentioned, plus music theory and music composition and music arranging. But I will say that in larger school districts, it is a greater challenge to maintain enrollment, and it is down in many cases below 20%. It's not so much that the school doesn't value music, it's that the access is inhibited often by the schedule or a cut in the staffing or instructional time or just conflict. So, but it is a real concern, particularly in larger school districts.
Yeah. So, what's your what's your hope, Michael George, for the future of music education?
Well, I think that we've said that music helps to develop creativity, and so we need to apply this creativity to what we do in our school music programs and really focus on alternatives. So it's not a matter of eliminating band, orchestra, and choir. It's really a matter of supplementing them with alternatives that will reach out to a greater number of students and also to other populations who aren't currently involved. Mr. Saul makes the point that we really have a small representation of minority populations in most of our school music programs, and he's correct. And I think that that is a concern for all of us, and one of the ways to turn that around is to offer alternatives that appeal to their culture and also to their interests. So it's really expanding opportunities, expanding the alternatives that students have, and allowing, in many cases, the students to take the lead, just as the caller from Verona mentioned earlier about, and I know the Verona program, and she's exactly right, they value students. One of their goals is to develop student independence, and they're doing a great job at that, and that's being replicated, I think, throughout our state. Wisconsin's pretty lucky compared to some states. I think that we're far ahead.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Michael George is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Center for Music Education. We wanted to see how music education was going in the state of Wisconsin as we talk with our guest, David Saul, who is the Associate Director of the Music Access Project of Portland, Oregon, and a student at Oberlin College and Conservatory in Oberlin, Ohio. He wrote a piece that appeared recently in the USA Today on how to enliven and save high school music. And we have him joining us from the studios in Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm wondering, David, what do you think of some of these things going on in Wisconsin? Garage bands, even.
You know, I'm thrilled to hear that Wisconsin has such an innovative curriculum in general for music. Certainly, I was happy to hear what Mr. George said about the Solo and Ensemble Festival. We have a similar festival in Oregon, although it does not have all those different divisions. It's much more geared toward, you know, classical instruments and voice. I think if we had programs like that are statewide that were more eclectic, that would be sort of a nice symbol to have of the direction we actually need to go with music. Something else I just wanted to bring up, since we're talking a little bit about, you know, getting students more involved and really trying to target student innovation, is I've tried to bring this up to a number of teachers in the Portland area, of music teachers, and a lot of people feel very threatened by it, I think. I think there are a lot of music teachers who are worried that they're becoming obsolete, or not necessarily worried they are, but feel that if I say that music education needs to be reformed somehow, that their job is at stake. So I've been trying to think of ways that you can, as a music advocate, sort of conservatively reform curriculum so that music teachers don't feel that they're going to be fired and replaced with someone who's, you know, hip or something. So one way to do this, I talked to my band teacher from high school, my former band teacher, who recently got to go to the Google Teacher Academy in Australia this past year. And something they talk about is the 20% rule. Google has something they call the 20% rule, which is essentially all their employees spend approximately 20% of their time pursuing their own project. So they're paid to do this. So you can see how that would apply to a music classroom pretty well. If you're for 5 days a week, you have band, let's say. I know that's not always the case. One of those days, students pursue a project of their choice. If that's learning guitar, if it's learning, you know, drums, if it's learning to sing, just anything related. It could be some, you know, if a student wants to learn music theory, if that's not offered at their school, as long and the teacher will have some, you know, responsibility of facilitation and supervision. But I think that has tremendous potential to really allow students to tap into that creativity, and also sort of the backflow of that for teachers to then assess what students are interested in and try to cater to teaching those skills.
I wonder if you have a quick reaction to our caller. Just before news time, I meant to ask you, she was so inspired by her high school band teacher that she says he changed her life, and she is now using music as she teaches preschool.
I absolutely have a response to that. I think that's wonderful, and that's actually very, very representative of a direction that I think a lot of educators want to go with the arts, looking at education reform as a whole, which is this idea of arts integration. So the idea that you are you can be a math teacher, or you can be a science teacher, or an English teacher, but you still need to somehow look at a way to add arts to your curriculum to access the creative side of your students.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that Portland has looked pretty in depth to. We have a program there called the Right Brain Initiative, which has done extensive research into this idea and to the idea of bringing in professional artists from the community to come in. You know, if there's a Shakespeare group or something, and they can come into a literature classroom, and obviously there's a collaboration there that's worth having. And I think the same holds true for preschool, for kindergarten, and definitely definitely that's a path that could be good.
I would have probably really enjoyed my math class a whole lot more if that was going on. So David Saul is our guest, associate director of the Music Access Project of Portland, Oregon, a student who happens to be a clarinet player at Oberlin College and Conservatory. And we're talking about the state of public school music programs and how to enliven and save them. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned for the Week in Review coming up after the news after 8 o'clock. Back now to the phones for David Saul, talking about music education and how to improve and how to sustain music education in our public schools. Karen in Cambridge is with us now. Hello, Karen.
Hello. It's nice to be here with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What did you want to say?
Well, I just wanted to tell you, tell you and your guests and your listeners that we do have a group in Wisconsin of music educators. It's called Student-Centered Learning in the Arts, and it's a group that's been around for about 10 years, and what your guest is talking about is exactly what we've been doing. We are promoting critical thinking, problem-solving, and creativity in our classrooms. And what we basically do is meet three times a year, talk about these ideas, go out, implement them in our classrooms, and then come back and meet again and talk about how did it go, what did you do, and then go out and try somebody else's idea.
Excellent.
And how is it going? It's great. Right now we have about 30 members in our group, and we have a website. It's sclawisconsin.com, in case anyone who's a music teacher out there, or art teacher, actually, it's because it's Student-Centered Learning in the Arts. We also have a few art teachers. And, it's great. We've made lots of good connections, and there's people from all areas, choral and orchestra, general music, and we're always looking for new members.
All right. Well, thank you very much for letting us know. That sounds good too, David.
Yeah, that's of course, that's wonderful. I think there are a number of these organizations that, I mean, this organization specifically sounds like it's been around for quite a while, but I've seen a few other organizations like this start to pop up around the country, and I think that that's really critical because, I mean, There needs to be widespread reform, but I don't think it's going to come from sort of one person making this massive change. It is going to be sort of a grassroots movement. So it's going to require some nonprofits to really take the lead.
Let's take another call from Valerie in Hartford. Hello, Valerie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a former elementary school teacher here in Wisconsin, and I just wanted to make the point that in order to have strong high school music programs, you do need also have a strong elementary school program, because that's where you plant the seed for the love of music and nurture it and help it to grow in the younger children. And also to go along with the caller that talked about how she teaches music and uses music in her preschool classroom, that's extremely important at a young age to have children get involved and develop that love of music, as I feel that it opens pathways in the brain that just can't be reopened once you get into high school.
Thank you, Valerie. You do bring up this point, too, in your piece, David.
Yes. And in fact, I mean, to that point, I think there's definitely a lot of science that backs that up, the idea that your brain will develop, better if you have some kind of musical education or arts education at a young age that really helps your right and left brain sort of form together and coordinate. And I mean, although I don't talk necessarily about elementary school music education, that's more because in at least where I'm from in Portland, from my experience, where there is elementary school music education, it is compulsory and students are required to go to it. So there's less of this problem of, you know, students opting out of it for one reason or another. So it seems like a slightly separate issue, and I want to bite off a smaller chunk. But that said, this is absolutely where students learn to love music. I took private lessons from a very young age, but I think I was very lucky in that regard.
Yeah, I thought I read somewhere that's where you developed your love for the clarinet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't start the clarinet until I got to middle school, but it still started at this mm-hmm. relatively young age. And I did play the piano through elementary school and had plenty of musical experiences. But I think you could make that argument really for any subject, not just for the arts, that elementary school is in a lot of ways the most important place. And you need a very strong elementary school elementary education before you can really become a successful student in middle and high school. And we see that over and over again.
Well, I'm afraid we don't have time for another caller. But, you know, we were just talking in our producers meeting yesterday about how Glee has been so successful of a TV show, and apparently it has helped boost enrollment in choral programs or choir. And there isn't a similar show for band. Maybe we need a show like that for band.
You know what? I think that could definitely help. And the Glee thing is interesting. I put that in the article because that's definitely a good point, I think. But I feel that a lot of people feel that there's some stigma surrounding Glee, or it seems that way to me. And a lot of people think that we're dumbing down music somehow if we have more show choirs, because that gets away from traditional choir. But I see that as, you know, if that's what's going to get students to sing and make music, quote unquote, cool, then that's where we need to start. And from that, students can expand their music education and mm-hmm. develop a love for Brahms or for Beethoven or whatever.
Are you optimistic that music education in public schools will get stronger in the future?
I am. I think the conversation is well on its way. And I think that at this point, the conversation is the most important part. And we need to definitely translate that into action. And we have in some instances. But music is finally sort of entering the discourse on education reform as a whole.
So. Thank you. Thank you so very much for being with us. And good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
David Saul, Associate Director of the Music Access Project of Portland and a student at Oberlin College and Conservatory. His USA Today piece on music education is linked to our website and the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Amanda Magnus and to Rob Ferrett for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.